Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Well, hello and greetings, comrades, listeners of the Eastern Border. I have returned to Latvia at this given moment. And, well, what I want to share with you are my experiences in America. Yeah, I visited that great country, and I went to the Sound Education Conference in Harvard. I met a bunch of people there, most of whom were podcasters, like our fellow guys, and our Dark Myths Network was represented by me. By Professor CJ from the Dangerous History Podcast, by Sam Davis from the Inward Empire Podcast, and by Ben Jacobs from Wittenberg to Westphalia. But I made a bunch of new friends, and I recommend to you that you should listen to, for example, Reconsider Podcast, which is like great guys, and they were like awesome to me. And everything was so awesome to me there that, yeah, I'm a bit stunned still. At the end of this episode, just after I finish speaking about my United States experiences, you will hear an interview that I made with no less than Dan Carlin himself. Well, it was mostly me and Sam, yeah, because we organized this beforehand, and he was speaking there, and it ended up pretty cool. So last 15 to 17 minutes are going to be an interview there. But so far, well, I have now walked the Freedom Trail fully. I've eaten clam chowder, and I've eaten oysters for the first time in my life. But I'm going to go through this point by point and tell you what exactly happened, because this was my first trip to the United States. I hope it's not going to be the last one. Well, my girlfriend Chantel tells me that she's going to drag me to California to meet her parents. But yeah, I visited America, I went to a conference, made a lot of new contacts, and it was all awesome. And I'm just still stunned when I'm making this episode. By the way, this is totally unscripted. This is totally unscripted, and I'll just be relaying to you things as they go on. Because, for one, I do believe that you guys, as you are history fans, have been, like, to Boston anyways and walked the Freedom Trail, so won't be delving to the depths of that thing. But, first of all, I want to say thank you. Thank you so much to Zachary Davis from the Ministry of Ideas for running the whole thing and for inviting me, your humble Latvian podcaster, on the show. And I found out that, well, yeah, you can make people in Harvard totally do a slob squat in the end of your presentation. It's going to be okay. But yeah, this is a kind of a compendium of my experiences in the United States, and I hope that you'll find this enjoyable, and like I said, at the end, there's going to be an interview with Dan Carlin. We will also be running a few interesting proposals here. For example, She's in Russia podcast has made a nice storytelling thing with Baba Yaga, and my friend Aritz Paeglis from the Latvian Transhumanist Association kind of needs your help right now to actually do something good for science. So that's coming in the future. I'm just mentioning it right now so that all the listeners here know that we will be doing some heavy promotion in the following episodes. But this is what I believe is good and awesome, so that some science can actually be done and so that my fellow podcasters could get their voices out there. But yeah, well, I went to America, and these will be my experiences. First, I want to talk about how different the United States actually are from Europe. I mean, I've traveled quite a lot around Europe. I've been to Stockholm and Berlin and London and many other places. And you always have a reference point, right? Well, not so in Boston. I mean, that was so strange for me that I can't really compare it to anywhere that I've been elsewhere. I mean, when you go there, you can just feel the America being in the air. Like, you have your flags everywhere, and there's Paul Revere. By this point, I can't stand Paul Revere because, oh my god, when Longfellow wrote that poem, he didn't know what he was talking about, because that's a huge-ass hero, apparently. But this American-ness, it's there. It's there, and it's really a tangible thing. You can feel it. And also, I was there with Zach from When Diplomacy Fails podcast. I met him, too. And you know what? Normally, in Europe, we'd be like, well, he's from Ireland, and I'm from Latvia, and we don't even mingle between ourselves, and he's, like, on the other end of the continent. But over there, in Harvard, it really felt like we're the European guys there, because we have so many unified things. Just was super crazy. This feeling of difference, really, this something else, feeling that you have these like super tall skyscrapers, because yeah, at least in Boston, well, from what I saw in downtown Boston, your buildings are at least thrice the size of everything that we're used to. Then again, my host there and my tour guide was honorable and glorious Sam Davis from the Inward Empire podcast, and he told me that, well, whenever he leads a bunch of European tourists around Boston, you know, we guys tend to be arrogant a lot, and when someone says that the oldest building here or there, you know, this many years old or something from the 18th century, yeah, then Europeans tend to scoff at it, but I didn't, and I learned a lot. But then again, I understood that whenever you mention that something X is the oldest thing in the United States, then yeah, it's in Boston probably, because like I said, I ate oysters for the first time in my life in clam chowder, and I ate them in the old Union Oyster House, and it was amazing, it was really great, and then I drank a pint of beer. Well, your American pints are smaller than our, like, half-liter ones. American pint is 473 milliliters, just so everyone knew, so it's, like, not a half-liter. But it was really great and amazing. I drank that one in the oldest continuously run pub in the United States. That was a major experience, too. And the conference itself, it was really well-organized and awesome. And I loved every second of it, except that there's tiny complaint that it should have been 3 days, because we were all, like, panned out. At the same time with my presentation, there were, like, 9 different presentations going on, like, in total 10. And it was very difficult to get a bunch of people there, but those who were there, who listened to my tale about the Soviet jokes, those people were very active, and I was really happy, and I got some contacts there. And at the end of the day, yeah, well, I am now the author of probably the first Slav squat in Harvard, because at the end of my presentation, I made everyone do a Slav squat, and that turned out to be really well and awesome. Secondly, you are a country of extroverts, Americans. You speak in lines, you speak with other people, you always communicate. That was my biggest shock there, well, besides the buildings. But, you know, I'm waiting in line to the Bank of America to exchange my euro monies, which apparently look like Monopoly money to you, because they're all different sizes and colors. And then Sam just starts chatting at random with some dude who is there to help exchange money and just offer some help. And that is so unheard of, because we just don't speak with each other here on the streets. We are not as extroverted. We're much more closed in, and we keep our lives very private. Then again, I do feel bad, because, well, I was hosted by Zachary Davis's friend for the last 2 nights, and by Sam Davis for the first 2 nights, and I felt like I'm doing something wrong all the time. So, well, Sam, if you're hearing this, I hope I wasn't a terrible guest, because you were the most amazing host ever. But yeah, I got the full tour. I started out in Boston Commons, and I went to, I went through the whole Freedom Trail, and I was on the USS Constitution, which is an amazingly large ship, if you imagine that one, because it technically has 44 cannons, but it was like running 50 or 60, and as soon as I hear about the Barbary Wars, where that thing fought, I'm totally gonna research that more. That was just great, except that you Americans always have things spelled out, because I was really stunned that there was a text in there which said, "Don't climb all the guns," which is crazy. But more about the food stuff. Again, I went to Wendy's. I don't have Wendy's here in Riga, and I ate a Baconator, because a Baconator is obviously something that you must eat to clog up your arteries. And that thing just struck me, because it was so fatty and so huge that I really felt sick afterwards. I'm being told that the In-N-Out burger, which I'm going to have to eat in after I go back to California at some point in the future, but In-N-Out burger is the best, or so people tell me, but hey, please, send us in your emails about what should I experience in the West Coast, guys. But I ate the Baconator, and it literally made me feel a bit bad after that. Turns out that you have a quarter pounder at McDonald's as well. And that's an interesting thing, because what you call a quarter pounder is called Mac Royale with cheese here.
Royale with cheese.
Royale with cheese.
That's right.
Then again, with all the Paul Revere superstition and everything, I understand why that might not be called Mac Royale there in the United States. I really enjoyed the United States in general. I will miss your Eagle Land. I will miss the friendly people, the nice streets, and how clean and amazing it all was. And I was like super stunned by the tallness of the buildings. And I went to the JFK Museum too. That was something different, and now one of my life goals is to visit all of your presidential museums in the States, because they seem like they hold the real value. I learned about your side of the Cold War. I learned about how it was like to be in America during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And that just stunned me, because I'm going to compare that in a future episode. Might be even the next one, but I'm not sure yet. The whole voice of hearing Kennedy speak, that was just something. And what stunned me more is that, you know, on my way to there, they have a metro station in Boston called JFK UMass. And they have shuttles from there to Kennedy Museum Library thing. And I took the wrong one, and I spent about an hour just, you know, traveling around the city in a bus, because apparently the shuttle that I took there, it was for medical students of LMA. You know, the shuttle basically stated, that's the JFK shuttle. And turns out that was referencing the metro station. Well, I spent an hour on that shuttle. And I had to speak with the bus driver there, because, you know, at one point, you know, I'm telling him that I need to go to the Kennedy Library, and he tells me that I'm on the wrong bus, and then he just starts speaking to me. It was, like, so weird, because, again, like, everything was super weird. But, yeah, he started speaking with me, and he just asks me, well, where are you from? You're obviously a tourist. And I'm like, I'm from Latvia. And he's like, well, never heard of it. And that happened like most people too, this never heard of it and this random conversation things, because, well, I gave my coins to a lot of poor people who were like asking with them with the Dunkin' Donuts cups in hand, and they always asked me where I'm from, because like they and a lot of people told me that I look like a European and I dress like a European, which is also something that I don't quite get, because, well, I am a European. But yeah, was a bit stunned by the fact that a lot of people just don't know where Latvia is or where we are or who we are. They just thought I'm a Russian, but, you know, not quite really. Yeah, it was a bit strange. And climbing the monument of Bunker Hill, that was amazing too. Like, I now know that it's 294 steps, because I climbed them all and I had a really great view from the top of the building, and it was amazing. But climbing up there and seeing the place where the colonial militias faced the redcoats was something else. It was really something else. Because the Americanness of the whole Boston city, it kind of stunned me. And a lot of people keep saying to me that I should go to New York too, and that I should visit much more places, and I hope that I will one day. But even Boston, where all the history is, all this experience just stunned me, because even that place has so many skyscrapers that I'm just not used to. I mean, I do live in the middle of nowhere for Europe even, and then I went to where, well, as far as I see it, most of America's history is. Just wow.
Hey everyone, Annette here. I hope you are enjoying our American recap. As always, a big thanks to everyone who's supporting us on Patreon. The trip to Harvard would not be possible without your help. We are working very hard to get you a recording of the conference Kristaps had as soon as possible. To keep up to date with everything Eastern Border related, follow us on our social media, on Twitter at Eastern_Border and on our Facebook page. We love to hear from you guys, so leave us a comment or send us an email. See you online!
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But yeah, one of the things I'd like to speak more about is general attitude about everything there. I was very surprised, like I said before, about the treatment of us Eastern Europeans there, because I have never been in such a city where everyone was like so friendly and so kind to me, and I never felt like I was too far from home. Everyone's out there to help me. And with all the fucking food and awesomeness and the conference too. But yeah, you know, I sadly couldn't take my Soviet flag with me. Imagine what would that be. It would be just great. But honestly, the whole experience has taught me a lot of things, and I hope that my show will just benefit from that in the future. I learned quite a lot about you Americans. You are different than us here in Europe. You are way more talkative and nice and kinder too, in a way. Way more proud as well. The thing is that it's really hard for me to even explain all of my experiences out there, because from one part, I felt extremely happy while even being in the United States. Even though the lack of trash cans was surprising. Yeah, see, in EU, we are mandated by law to have a publicly available trash can next to every house, but apparently that's not a thing in Boston, because those guys keep their trash cans separate and inside buildings, and they try to hide them away from other people. So I had to walk a while before I could find a way where to drop my Coca-Cola can. And speaking about Coca-Cola, we use sugar beet sugar here in Latvia, and high fructose corn syrup is illegal. So yeah, your Coca-Cola tastes different from mine. And my girlfriend told me that I should try out those Kraft American Singles things. You know, those that literally can't be called cheese, because they are a cheese product, I suppose. And I found them really funny. They were tasty enough, as I would put them on a sandwich when I would have a hangover, but otherwise... it's such a strange experience, really. I don't know, breathing in your air and your history, understand where the difference lies, really. And as a European, whom many Americans listen to, and, you know, of course, many Europeans as well, so that goes out to all of you. But I do have to say that America just feels different. It feels different from what we have here. It's a whole different world, really, and there's a reason why they call it the New World. Just by telling you all of this stuff through my audio podcast, it feels wrong. It feels just terrible. And wherever you live in America, my American listeners, I am coming back. Oh, I am, because I enjoyed it so much. And, well, like my friends stated here, well, I'm not dead, therefore I must be full with liberty. And, well, what can I say? Well, much freedom, very liberty indeed. And the weirdest part is that if you walk out of the town and you walk out somewhere which is like not a very touristy place, and then you instantly see this huge American flag, which is just there to remind you where, if you had forgotten, where you are located. So that was also just stunning. The more specific things, one thing that really kind of struck me the bad way, actually, was the fact that I listened to a bunch of people, like academical historians, trying to speak bad things about Dan Carlin. And Dan Carlin's our patron saint. Because really, in that conference, well, who wasn't there? Danieli Bolelli, because he was busy. Mike Duncan, because he was busy too. And Travis J. Dow, because he was filming a movie or something. But besides those three guys, if you listen to any podcast whatsoever, they were in the conference. And I met them all. It was really awesome. Special thanks, of course, goes to my podcasting colleagues from the Agora Podcast Network, which I used as my HQ base there. The thing is that there were some people out there who were like feeling that we kind of not professional history podcasters, because, you know, I didn't go around flaunting my history degree to people. There are a bunch of people who are like, oh, I'm going to dethrone Dan Carlin because I have these academical credentials and he doesn't. Well, tough luck, boy or lady, because Dan makes it all interesting. The conference at all taught me a lot of things about how to make an interesting show and why being interesting matters, why all of this thing works on. And I understood that we're used to, here in Latvia, people being more cynical and being more mean. But this open kindness and open niceness that I got was like the most shocking part of all of it. And it's kind of weird that you go to a place where... You know what? I've seen only Boston from the movies, right? And then you go there and you understand that, yep, that thing is totally just like you would see in the movies. A completely weird thing just happened to me. And if you are an American listener and haven't walked the Freedom Trail, I highly recommend that you do. that was just amazing, because if you study about this in Europe, if you just listen to some podcasters or whatever, you don't get a feel for it. But when you are in front of this old state house in Boston, Massachusetts, and then you see the spot of the Boston Massacre in front of your feet, and then you go into the museum, and there they explain to you everything that has happened and how that influenced everything that was going on at the time, it's something different. Something very different. And that is why I do believe that, to my non-American listeners, America is actually pretty great already. That's the weirdest part. And when you go to, like, the JFK Museum and you see JFK blasting campaign slogans like, you know, America needs greatness, then America is pretty great, actually. All I can give to you is astounding approval of everything. But before I leave you with my short interview with Dan Carlin himself, and Dan Carlin is as awesome in person as humanly possible, and I gave him a souvenir, a Latvian souvenir. I gave him a brooch made out of a Latvian old school silver 5 lats coin, because having those was illegal in Soviet era, so people made brooches out of them and jewelry so that they wouldn't have to declare them. That carries a lot of significance because in the fall of the Soviet era, they were used to represent your nationalistic sentiments. They were used to tell people that you care about Latvia. And I'm very happy that Mr. Dan Carlin, I have a shrine for him built at my place, obviously, just as all podcasters do. I'm very happy that this will be in his closet and stuff. And we, with Sam, managed to give a short interview with him, so that's going to be there. But I have to give thanks to Noel. Noel was amazing. Noel, or lesbian pigeon fan on Twitter, as far as I get it. Yeah, she was one of the few listeners that actually really arrived there to hear me speak. And it felt very nice, you know, because I'm from the middle of nowhere, but I go to this conference in the United States, and turns out that there are people just coming over to see me, and that people actually know who I am and how this thing has grown. And then again, before we move on to Dan Carlin part, I have to say massive thank you for all of you out there, because my experience was wonderful, and I had never felt so appreciated in a way, as, yeah, no one knows me in Latvia. Then there I moved to the States, and then things happen. And in the first day, I got to speak with a lot of people who are, like, making a history podcast, and they have, like, these 19 interns and 12 researchers and 5 sound editors and whatnot, and it just felt so fake. So me and Sam and CJ and Ben, we're, like, in the background, the Dark Myths guys, and we feel like we're these gonzo, rebellious, weirdo types who are just being there for the entertainment of our listeners, and we're actually trying to tell the real story, and everyone else is this very researched, hyper-advanced, super-produced product of a podcast who's, like, much more popular than we are. But we tried our best, and it worked out quite well. Yeah, American beer is quite awesome, too. I just have to mention that here before I get off my script completely. Then again, I actually taught people what milliliters were, and when I posted on Twitter about how I drank American beer, and I posted that, oh my god, this medium one is 700 milliliters, which is crazy. Same with coffee, too. I drank at Dunkin' Donuts, and when I asked for a medium coffee, they gave me a 600 milliliter one. Okay, 598. It's just insane. That's triple the size of a regular coffee in Riga. Regular coffee in Riga is 200 milliliters. 240, maybe. This is 600. This is like what? And people over here were making jokes about, wait a minute, so is the extra large one like a liter or something? Well, and apparently it is. Strange feeling, you know, when you go to a place which is just so much bigger than your place, and when your experiences are so stunning that you, you know, can't put them in words precisely. But one thing is for sure, I definitely do miss your mighty Eagle Land. I do miss that place because, really, in Europe, people do care much more about how their people look like. We're much introverted, and you guys have something going on for you. I appreciate the chance that was given to me, and I appreciate that I got to go there, and I'm hoping that it's not my last time. Oh, yes, and I have absolutely tried Kentucky Bourbon. That was poured to me by Reconsider, guys. Go listen to Xander, and it's going to be awesome. But yeah, they're pretty good already. But enough of my bambling right now, just so you'd be entertained and just so you get something out of my random experiences. This, ladies and gentlemen, is Dan Carlin. I'm going to give you my on-the-spot, recorded with an iPhone interview, which we took after his speech, and you should check this out on YouTube because apparently it was streamed. This is my interview with Dan Carlin me and Sam Davis' interview with Anne Carolyn for about 17 minutes. I was very honored to have that. But for now, enjoy the show and historical episode coming Sunday. До свидания, товарищ.
Hello, Mr. Dan. I am super stoked to meet you here and to talk to you. And it's amazing because, honestly speaking, I just wanted to start with a quick story, but this is important to me because I found your podcast while, you know, looking up, because, you know, we Latins are kind of into the piracy thing. So I was looking on game mods for my board games, which I play. And then in one of the folders there, there was like this thing called Hardcore History. And I thought, what is this? And I just found you from there. I have since then actually purchased all the extra episodes, but... Then I went in your forums, which sadly are dead now. As a journalist and as myself, I just went around laughing and gathering stories of people who served in the Soviet Army. And I just published them on your forums. And what happened then was that people, especially the guy with the boots, I remember that guy with the boots, he told me that I should do my own show. And I was like, oh no, I can't do that. It's Dan Carlin's forums. And what will he say? And then I started that. And apparently, well, from middle of nowhere in Riga, Latvia, I am now standing in Harvard discussing. Do you sometimes really feel the impact you've had on other podcasters?
More and more at these kind of events, I'm still trying to digest exactly what you said about your podcast for my podcast. Because when we started this thing, you couldn't even explain to people what it was. So forget about getting an audience. We couldn't even, you know, podcast was a 45-minute conversation trying to explain how do you get it? What do you do with it? So in answer to your question, not only have I not figured out whatever impact I might have on other people, I'm still trying to get my mind around what's happened here. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it does, but, you know, by this point, you have reached the point where, like, we podcasters should build, like, small, tiny shrines of you in the corners. Yeah, that's time for me, where Emperor, he's my host here, so I'm staying at his place, and we are in this podcasting network called Dark Myths. Oh, with Daniele Bolelli, too, by the way.
Oh, really? So okay.
So,
Daniele is my friend.
So,
I just wanted to share as well, as I think we all have these stories for your listeners about our first experiences listening to Hardcore History. And for me, I was a music major originally, and I was like living and starving, being a working musician in Montreal. I graduated in 2012, and in 2015, I kind of put my music career to bed. And I was thinking, you know, so I knew that I was a creative person, and I had heard, I think, in maybe 2013 or 14, I started listening to Death Throes of the Republic. Oh. It was my first experience.
That's a long one.
Yeah. And as someone who had this experience and this background with history, I thought, you know, what is this? Like, what you said today in the conference about treating that blank space of sound as your canvas, I mean, in terms of the history that I'd read that resonated with me, it was like, you know, books like Barbara Tuchman's A Distant Mirror or Citizen's Vitality in the American Past, like, the possibility to take that interest and put it into this kind of sound canvas was something that I found enormously inspirational.
So, and you've written on in digital stone a little graffiti that, you know, like I tell people, and this applies to all podcasters, I think, especially if you're putting yourself into the material, my great-grandchildren can listen to this and get a sense of me. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll have a little bit of an understanding in a way that I don't have of my even grandfather, right? I would love to have... I mean, it's like, in a sense, if you read someone's diary, you get a sense of who they are. But this is your art, and you put your part of your soul into this all the time. And that part, if the person on the other end is either, shall we call it, sensitive, or if you're very good at what you do, they're going to get a sense of you through this, whether or not you're even terrestrially here anymore. Imagine any of the great figures of the past that we would like to know more about. Had they podcasted so much about his time, what you don't understand is someday there are going to be historians who listen to this material that we're producing to try to get a better sense of the zeitgeist now. And you're contributing to that. You're writing in graffiti, in rock forever here. And you think about how people always wanted to be remembered and make a mark on history and not be just another name that disappears into the past. This is it. Right? I mean, this is incredible to think about what you're passing on. And forget about the subject matter at all. It's the you that's passing on. A piece of yourself, your unique self, that's never been another person like you, is going to be around as long as this stays. I mean, until we have our Statue of Liberty moment in the sand and there's no more podcasts. I mean, and that's, you know, Cicero said that the only true form of immortality is writing. But this is writing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so, in a sense, this is a true form of immortality. And there's something to get paid, or to make a living, or to have listeners and benefit from that for making myself immortal for you. Come on, man. This is like a dream come true. And especially coming from the pre-podcasting world that I come from.
Yeah, but sometimes it gets like really abused, because one thing that I want to draw attention to is that I come from Eastern Europe, and I'm right next to Russia. And my listeners decided at one point Soviet history wasn't enough, and then now they're poking me about making more current news episodes, which I do. And for that, I listen to Russian opposition media. And I don't like the five most prominent Russian opposition media YouTubers that I've listened to. Four of them have been forced to migrate elsewhere, and one guy's car got burnt, he got fired, and his family members got fired. So I think that what should be appreciated a lot is that, well, for you guys, mostly based in America and Western Europe, it's much more easier, but yeah, over there, well...
Information's dangerous.
I mean, honestly, I have received my own death threats, and for us, in Eastern Europe, where it's all new, like, I get death threats by Putin's trolls, my ribs have been broken, things have happened to me, and it's, for us, sometimes it's like... The fact that you exist and you make this happen, and this whole idea that you present as a symbol too by now from podcasting, it helps a lot of us over there back in our middle of nowhere kind of pull through and do this as well, dealing with the hard stuff.
See, what's funny is I don't think of you as in the middle of nowhere. I think of you as right in the middle of it all. You know, I mean, you look at Latvia on a map and then draw a line down the map. I mean, you're kind of right there. In terms of, you know, it's interesting always to hear about the problem, we'll call them trolls for now, but we all are impacted by that, but not specifically Russian trolls, specifically directed at you. What would be interesting is if more Latvian podcasters spring up over time, are they able to control... I mean, if you're the one guy, it's easy to target you.
Well, there are some podcasters in Latvia, but I'm the only one there who does anything in English. I'm like, I can surely say that I'm the biggest podcaster in the Baltics, so... At least that's nice.
But I mean, even Latvia, Lithuania, all of those places have a similar sense of feeling like the Russian bear is right over the top of them.
Yeah, but they're actively doing that, too. Like, the Russians... really impact our daily lives through media and everything because of all the stuff that they say.
It doesn't surprise me, though, and the funny thing is it would be almost a little strange if it didn't. I mean, Latvia to the Russians is a little like Mexico or Canada to us, and it would be strange if we didn't bleed over heavily into both of those areas. Now, maybe you would suggest, although it depends on your point of view, that our bleeding over is a little bit more benign than the bleeding over you have to deal with. I certainly understand the dynamic. I can't understand you being so happy about all you've gone through to have to put up with this stuff, because my life is obviously easier than what you're having to deal with. At the same time, there's a real admiration. It makes me think of the Radio Free Europe's or the people behind the front lines who are still broadcasting to the opposition people. I mean, it's maybe not that dramatic, but it's halfway between where I am and that. So it's kind of a really interesting tale someday to tell your story.
I hope so. Well, Sam?
We'll see how it turns out.
Well, I have to survive first.
I hope it's a happy ending.
I have a question for you, actually, about this question of history and politics. So one of the questions that I think it was CJ asked you during the Q&A period was, you know, this question of, is there such a thing as objective history? And I think I agree with him that the only sane answer is no. But there's another question that I'm curious about, which is there such a thing as apolitical history? And by that, I mean history that doesn't directly interact with some kind of, you know, precedent. They talk a lot about relevance, right? And I teach high school. I teach 9th and 10th grade. And one of the big things in terms of what we choose to...
You teach history?
Yeah. And one of the big things that we choose in terms of, like, which topics do we select, it has a lot to do with the questions of relevance, and there's constant efforts to pitch the relevance of these things to students.
I hate that.
When I listen to... And it seems like that's been a huge thing since the 60s, right?
Yeah.
And probably...
It's been a huge thing forever.
Before,
when you turn history into an academic discipline and try to figure out the very basic question of, okay, history is everything that ever happened, so what do we choose out, right?
Yeah.
The problem... I did... There's a George Lucas Foundation called Edutopia, where he's trying to find new ways to teach. And they asked me to write an article for them, and I said no. I said no because I wasn't an educator, and I didn't want to intrude into their territory. I'm very, very sensitive about that. I don't want to step on anybody's toes. And he said, but that's why we asked, because you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And would you write it? So I wrote a piece that just said that the problem with history is that we tell people what they have to know. Because we all have interests, and because history is everything that's ever happened, I can pick different subjects and make you very interested. I just have to pick the subject you're already into. right? And if, and this was my assumption in the Edutopia article I wrote, which was, if you say people need to know that in 1492 Columbus discovered America, I can agree with you. But what if they forget it right after the test? What did you really accomplish? They should know it, but they did for the test, but then they don't. What we can teach maybe is the process of history, right? So you say something like, what are you into? I'm into motorcycles. Okay, let's talk about motorcycles for a second. How did you get, what was the first motorcycle ever? And then you show the progression. How did it get from here to there? And what you've ended up teaching in the end is nothing about Columbus in 1492, but you have taught them that there's an evolutionary process and that things happen and outside. In other words, you've taught them kind of how things develop, how things go from A to Z in this one little area that interests you. If you walk away understanding that historical process, and you were going to be one of those people that forgot the Columbus thing 1 second after the test, didn't we just do better? Right? Didn't we just? So my problem with that is that the decision that everybody should know this is predicated on two things. One, that you're going to remember it, and two, that you really do need to know that. And that's maybe where things went wrong. But let's go back to when all this stuff was decided in an educational climate that was much different than today, right? This kind of climate 200 years ago, right, where people are... We're not there anymore. And so in answer to your question, I think the way you touch those people is you find out what they're interested in anyway. And then you say, guess what? There's a history of that. You into fashion? There's a history. You into celebrities? There's a history of that. And you can show the process development, how the historical forces unfold, and you can give them a sense of time moving. And you can then apply that to other things. And that's what makes it useful, is that it's applicable across the board. You've taught a process, not a fact. Does that make sense? A fact that people will, you know, how that goes.
In education, we talk a lot about, you know, skills versus content.
Yes.
Now, like,
yes.
Big
yes.
trends with that. It's so heavily on the skills side. And even with the department that I work at, you know, I have conversations with colleagues, and they sometimes say, well, the content's kind of irrelevant. You know, the actual literal things that we're choosing are really just a vehicle to teach broader skills about how you think about
history. But do they learn it?
Do they learn it is a big part. That's the other thing we always grapple with is, you know, how do we know students are learning what we want them to
do? And how do you test? Yeah. Right? In other words, if I say, find whatever you're into and study the history of that, well, then... Does my test deal with motorcycle history or fashion history or celebrity history? But I do think that that's part of the process, is that I do think that history is something we're innately interested in. We're just interested in other facets of it or other parts of it, and that we can bring that out as long as we're not so concerned. But you know, I was talking to somebody out there about the freedom that podcasts allows you. People who are... I've become a middle school teacher. You don't have that kind of freedom, right? You walk into a complex system that's already developed, and you have to fit that mold. But if we're just trying to teach how historical processes unfold, I have a lot of ways to do that without teaching the things you want me to teach.
I have one final follow-up.
Sure.
So with your two shows, there's Common Sense, which is politics. There's hardcore.
Current events. I always say current events, but yeah.
Okay. One of the things about listening to your history show is that there's something very refreshingly apolitical about it, in the sense that with a lot of these topics, you identify these things, you know, the hook at the beginning, which is the, you know, the classics, the Statue of Liberty and the Sand example, yeah. And there's something deeper and more timeless about that, as opposed to this is connected to Trump, you know, which I think is what 90% of academic historians do
is
now.
It? I don't know.
They try to,
try to make it reality.
When they make their own, you know, it's just like what's going on today, and it's this one-to-one kind of correlation. I'm wondering, though, when you choose your topics for the history show, let's say Imperial Japan, World War II, is there a deeper kind of message that you consciously decide, you know, this, like, I think this story has this to say to this particular time, and then you kind of,
yeah,
you know, very, very artfully work to
We call it the spine, or the sub-spine. So for example, in the Supernova show, which is ostensibly about Japan and the Second World War, we're talking about, can you take something that most people think is a good thing and dial it up so high that it's a bad thing? So can you take something like patriotism and love of country and duty and intensity towards your work or whatever, and can you turn that up so high that that turns on you somehow? And so for that one, that's... So everything does have an answer to your question. And we consciously think in terms of what... You know, everything's woven. So I always compare it to a rope. And you have several strands to the rope. And one strand we always try to include is this idea of deeper themes. And I don't push anything on you. And in fact, I might even quote people who consciously have the opposite opinion, because what we're trying to do is that mosaic idea that I talked about. I'm trying to flesh it out. And so this developed from that Jaws problem I was talking about. I'm not a historian, so when I give you a fact, why should you believe me? So I don't want you to believe me. I want to quote somebody whose qualifications are good enough for you to believe, and then I want to quote somebody who disagrees with them, so that you get a sense that, as one guy wrote me, he said, I didn't realize, I thought history was like math. Right? 2 + 2 = 4. No, it's like now, where you have an MSNBC. If we only got MSNBC's version of history as opposed to Fox's, it would look a totally different way. So in some of these stories we have, we only have that one version, but you have to realize that. And so teaching, it's funny, that as you know, we were always taught in school that historiography was the most boring thing in the world. Turns out, if you explain it in terms people understand it, they're actually fascinated with history. Now, I didn't know that. We do it quietly, softly, and in a way maybe you don't even know you're learning historiography. But people love it. So there's a lot of unexpected reasons that the podcast turned out the way it did. Part of it is responding to things that people liked that you didn't know they would like. And maybe you're self-selecting your audience. That's one thing. And maybe you are just particularly good at somehow bringing that aspect to life. But the idea of looking at the past and then trying to find some meaning for today's world, I think if you do it right, it does it naturally. Does that make sense? You don't need to be so obvious that you say, if you do it right, and truthfully, we talked about that chink in the armor getting through the defense shield. That's how you get through the defense shield. If you say, it's just like Trump, well, the defense shield's up, right? You've got to be more subtle.
Okay, to kind of end this up. Well, I want you some
It's going to be a six-hour podcast, isn't it?
No, just quickly. Do you have any final words that you'd like to say to your fans in Eastern Europe? Hey, maybe something to the fans of Inward Empire and the Eastern Border, too. Just saying.
I think having an international audience is so cool. And I said to my wife, if they gave me a job in New York, which is the number one media center in the United States, on the radio there, I wouldn't ever take it because it would be a demotion. Because right now we speak to the whole world, and that is amazing. And a huge responsibility, because when I say something like, you know, things like this are going on in Iran, in the old days, nobody knew whether that was true or not. Today I get emails from Iran. So I love the international audience. Thank you, everyone in Latvia.
Thank you.
Thanks, buddy. Thank you for driving. Thanks for coming all this way. Nice meeting you both. Great questions. Nice meeting you, too.
Hello.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Eastern Border. If you have any comments or specific details you'd like to know, you're welcome to leave it in the comment section on our site, theeasternborder.lv, and we'll rummage even to the western border to find you an answer. Like this podcast? Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or on our RSS feed. Happiness is mandatory. Good reviews and donations feed the farmers of our kolkhoz in the great motherland. The Eastern Border salutes you. This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org for The Dark Myths Void.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.